Now, it's On the Wine Road Live with Jeff Davis, brought to you by American Ag Credit, money for agriculture.
And On the Wine Road Live is part of KSRO's Ask the Expert series of shows. Michelle Marquez is the engineer driving the train once again this week. I'm the host, and today another fascinating guest is joining us. Like many of my guests, Casey Graybell is a self-made winemaker, so to speak, taking advantage of opportunities that came his way. And, you know, Casey, unlike a lot of winemakers, oddly enough, you had two experiences that I think helped you out, one of which is that your parents were consumers of wine, and you even refer them to them as connoisseurs.
They were. My dad was drafted, during Vietnam. However, his older brother was serving, and so instead of sending them to Vietnam, he went to Germany with my mother, and they started drinking wine in Germany, and they brought it back with them. And they, in our household growing up, and still to this day, they were drinking fine wine. When grandma would come over, we'd have the jug, but they'd put that away when she was gone. And
They were pulling out the bad stuff for grandma. Huh?
Yeah. And, and I grew up in the East Bay in San Ramon, so they were really hitting up, Napa Valley in the early 80s.
That was the other thing, the other experience you got to enjoy was going up as a youngster to Napa Valley. And a lot of winemakers didn't get that opportunity.
It's true, unless your family's in it. Coming from someone whose family is not in it, that was experiences that were imprinted on me, and I still think that they're in there somewhere. We would go and visit Napa Valley quite a bit. And that was back in the kind of Wild West days there, where you could bring your kids and they could run around in the barrel rooms and no one really cared. And God, things have changed quite a bit.
Yeah, I was going to ask, although at your place, I think there's plenty of space for kids to run around.
There is. We're pretty easy about that. So, yeah, you can bring your kids over to us.
I was going to ask if those trips kind of planted the winemaking seed in your mind.
I think it did. Yes, I still can remember that smell of, a barrel room. I can't smell it anymore because I'm in it all the time. But, as a kid, that smell was imprinted in my brain.
I wanted to do a little bit of an introduction before I mention Casey's wine brand. I like the direction you chose to go. You're not Graybell Winery, nor did you choose the evocative name like Vineyard Mist Wine. Your brand is the Grenachista.
It's true. It's a little like self-serving, but...
Well, yeah. I think it's a great way to express your passion.
Yeah, actually, funny enough, the label used to be my last name and my grandfather's name, but it just didn't tell the story of what we were doing. And so about 2 years into that label, we completely changed direction. And we're still doing the same thing with the old label, but it, like I said, it just didn't tell the story of Grenache, and that's really what it's all about. So we changed the name and changed the marketing direction, and it's been all uphill. I mean, in a good way, not like in pushing a rock up the hill. Well,
but you're succeeding in certain aspects.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're also lucky to have an educational path right out of high school, being in San Francisco.
Yeah, that's a long, funny story. I worked in fine dining in the city right out of high school, pretty much. And that's really another place that I cut my chops in tasting wines and drinking wines. And, as a youngster in restaurants, we drank a lot of wine and beer. And
But the good stuff was always around.
The good stuff was always around. It's true. And so we were tasting, pretty amazing wines at a young age. So I got to experience that. I think that's kind of where Grenache came a little later, but I think that was still the gateway drugs into the wine industry. So it was, the Napa Valley Chardonnays and Cabernet that, funny enough, is the same wines my parents were drinking.
Yeah, sure. I like the story about how you being in San Francisco was a high school present from your brother. It was supposed to be, what, just 2 years?
From my parents, actually. Oh, from your parents? It was my graduation gift. Like, hey, you can go hang out with your brother in the city for 3 months, but you come back here and you start junior college. And, three months turned into 5 years.
It happens that way sometimes. So you did move down to San Luis Obispo at some point after your experience with the restaurants and the city. And like a lot of folks, you did a harvest down there. Is that what kind of?
I did a bunch of harvests. Yeah, actually, I moved down there in 2001 to do a harvest and to start my path down my education. So I actually, that first year, went to Allen Hancock Junior College in Santa Maria and then transferred into Cal Poly. Finished up at Cal Poly. So I was down on the Central Coast for 6 years, both getting an education and then working in the wine industry. But, you know, I'm a Bay Area and I missed home. I also found that, you know, Central Coast, it's beautiful. It's, you know, once I moved, I wanted to move back. But when you're there, it can get a little boring, honestly, and as a Bay Area, and like I want to go to a baseball game, I want to go to a show, and it's an airport,
an airport that didn't take 2 hours or longer to drive to.
Yeah, so there were some other reasons. But I came back up to the Bay Area where my roots run deep, and we've been here ever since.
But you had a great opportunity in Santa Barbara though too.
Yeah, I was working at a winery in Santa Maria that was making northern Santa Barbara County wines. I worked there for 3 years.
Is that where you got the taste and the drive and the passion for the Grenache and Rhone varietals?
Yeah, absolutely, it is. That was 2004, right when, you know, what's that dumb movie about Pinot? Sideways. Yeah, that came out, and so you know, Pinot is the craze. And don't get me wrong, I still love a good Pinot, but and we were drinking lots of Pinots back then. But I found a Grenache from Ballard Canyon, and you know, it was kind of just starting to have fruit come out of there, and I tasted it, and it's like, yeah, this is where it's at.
You know, if you're a Pinot Noir lover, you should be a Grenache lover too, because they're so similar in many ways. I mean, the flavor profiles are a little different, but you know, the weight of the wine and the depth of character and the differences they can have. You know, Grenache can be lighter style and also a very rich, deep wine as well.
You're preaching to the choir. I mean, absolutely agreed. Grenache, like Pinot, it just shows its site so well. It's really a terroir-driven grape, and clonal selections can change a lot of the wine. And yeah, you can make a light feminine style or, you know, big, heavy, dark, brooding Grenache. It has so many ways it can be made. It's so versatile. Luckily for me, it is that way because I've hemmed myself in a little bit in this project and that it's all Grenache or Grenache Blanc. But I can make so many different wines from that grape.
Yeah. That tastes different, but yet still from the same grape.
Absolutely. And, you know, picking decisions definitely drive the bus there. You can pick a little early and you get a lovely, bright, you know, acid-driven wine that's similar to a Burgundian Pinot, but with some more oomph. Yeah. Or, you know, let it hang a little bit and you end up with a dark, heavy wine that's, you know, I used to make, Grenache certainly can do that, but that's not really my style anymore.
This is the Spanish style of the Garnacha. I've had some really nice, fantastic Garnachas in the past.
Yeah. You know, I'm more of a delicate, nuanced, reserved winemaker in that way. So a lot of my wines reflect that, and I think they really follow down that Pinot rabbit hole. Mm.
Is that because you have a sensitive soul?
It's true. No, it's actually an evolution of my winemaking style. I didn't start out this way, but the more I make wines, the more I'm actually like hands off. And that's kind of what goes along with that.
So it was no surprise to see you in Paso Robles in April at the Hospice du Rhone event.
Oh, yeah, we were whooping it up.
That's a lot of fun.
It was.
That's my first one, and that was a grand time. I mean, wineries come from France, in addition to around the western coast of the U.S., and everybody's there just pouring their Rhone varietals. And
yeah, you know, I think this last year was less of it was more of a commercial event than a sales event. It was a lot of winemakers there, probably not a whole lot of wine buyers, but we still had a great time.
Definitely. Let's pause now. On the Wine Road Live is brought to you by American Ag Credit, money for agriculture. I'll continue with Casey Grable, the Grenacheista, when we continue here on KSRO. Mm-hmm.
It's closing night for Plaza Music Series at the Rohnert Park Farmers Market, celebrating Rohnert Park's 60th birthday. There's free live music with two bands, a certified farmers market, food and craft booths, and beer and wine from 5 to 9. This week, it's Slack and Thomas duets, songs from Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell, to Tony Bennett and Lady Gaga at 6. Then Bay Area favorites, The Hots, playing old school rock with new wheels from 7:30 to 9. It's a City Center Plaza in partnership with the City of Rohnert Park and sponsored by Sonoma Clean Power, your local public power provider. Help the environment with cleaner electricity. Discover simple ways to save energy and money at SCP's Advanced Energy Center, 741 4th Street in downtown Santa Rosa. With Sonoma Clean Power, find easy ways to reduce your impact, save energy, and support a healthier future for all. Catch the last market of the season Friday, August 26th with Slack and Thomas duets and The Hots.
Hey, I'm Ariana. A little thing I love about the Chick-fil-A Spicy Southwest Salad is when I take a bite, it's like, wow. I'm getting a punch from the roasted corn. I'm getting a kick from the spicy chicken. It's just great.
Hi, this is Tori. A little thing I love about the Chick-fil-A Cobb salad is the avocado lime dressing. It adds to the chicken, the bacon, and the roasted corn. It takes the salad to a whole nother level.
Order a salad for delivery on the Chick-fil-A app today. Real guests paid for their testimonials.
News anywhere. Stream KSRO from your smartphone or smart speaker. KSRO, Sonoma County's News Talk, FM, AM, and online.
Goal Zero's home backup systems power your fridge, lights, Wi-Fi, TV, and more, all with clean energy from the sun, which means you can have peace of mind when blackouts hit. Learn more at GoalZero.com. So yeah, nice try, blackouts, but you just got owned.
On the Wine Road Live continues on KSRO, brought to you by American Ag Credit, money for agriculture.
I'm talking with Casey Grable, the Granachista of Sonoma County now, but he's been around a little bit. And I wanted to say, when you were down in Santa Barbara, I saw that you were accepted to UC Davis while you were going to Cal Poly there for a little while.
I was. That's what ended up bringing me back to the Bay Area. I got accepted to grad school at UC Davis and moved up and got a little room in a shared house at UC Davis in August. And school is starting late, mid-September. And so I landed there and...
I thought it was a little tough to go from the Central Coast to the Central Valley.
It was. Davis sucks. I'm sorry, everybody, but it's flat, it's hot, and then it's cold and it's foggy. And you know what? I just finished a bunch of schooling, so my brain started taking me in other places, and I went to the library at UC Davis, and on the job board was a internship for Cake Bread Sellers. And I was like, well, let's see what happens. So I called them up, and they called me in for an interview the next day. And at the end of the interview, they hired me.
Wow.
As an intern. And so I did that internship. That was 2004. And
so did you move over to Napa Valley? Or?
No, I was commuting. And I, you know, called my dad and said, hey, I'm going to put off grad school for the season. And he's like, oh, no.
He knows when you give a point of time, it could... easily get much larger.
Yeah, he's like, I've heard this story before.
Which apparently it did.
It did. I didn't do grad school. Cake Bread hired me on full time, and I ended up working there for 9 years.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
What a great find.
Yeah, it was a great experience. I mean, we made a lot of wine there.
And then you worked for Obsidian Ridge Wine Company. And now those are the guys that were making their own barrels?
Yes, I still work for them. And they own a cooperage in Hungary, Kadar Cooperage. And so that's pretty cool. We get to go to Hungary every so often. In fact, we were there this May. And I still make a lot of wine for them.
Oh, great. Yeah. And I saw that's where you finally got to kick off your own brand.
Yeah, when they headhunted me from Cake Bread in 2011 to build out their brand new winery down in Sonoma. And part of the reason I went there is they told me that I could start my own label in the facility if I wanted. And took me a little while to do the business end of it, but three years later, I was up and running.
How did they come across you to want to reach out to you through a headhunter?
It was actually through the cellar master at Cake Bread, Brian Lee, who he had pulled me aside. I'd worked there, for obviously for a long time, and he pulled me aside one day, and he was like, listen, I'm not going to retire for another 10 years. You should go somewhere else. And he was like, I'm not trying to be mean. I want you to stay here.
Oh, that's actually very nice of him to say that to you.
It was. I love that guy. And, you know, he was just like, you know, you can go run a winery. You know, I don't want to lose you, but, you know, it's time to spread your wings. And
oh, that was great.
Yeah.
Those guys are located in, the Cornerstone?
Obsidian, yeah. The tasting room's in Cornerstone, and then our winemaking facilities and on 8th Street East in Sonoma.
And that's where you kind of have your home base.
Yep. Right? So I am making my wine there while I'm there too. So it works out perfectly.
Yeah, that industrial strip of buildings on 8th Street or Avenue.
8th Street 8th East.
8th Street East.
Yeah.
That's right. Just on the east side of Napa. Yeah, a lot of people are over there making wine.
It's true. Even in our own facility, we do a little custom crush and, you know, there's a rotating band of broken toys.
And you do tastings over there?
By appointment, yes.
Mm-hmm. Of course. So it was 2013 that you finally got enough scratch together to become the Grenachista?
It's true. I found a couple people dumb enough to invest some money in me, and away we went. This is our 10th vintage, not under the Grenachista. The first two were under my C.R. Graybell wine label. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's amazing. We're 10 years deep.
Did you pay those people off yet?
No. I haven't paid me. What are you talking about?
I was going to say, I'm not surprised you haven't made money, but it's funny when I hear the name Grenachista, I think of like a Spanish outlaw. You know, I was wondering, you know, you should probably wear a wine thief on your hip, you know, and be the true Grenachista.
Well, it is supposed to be a little edgy. I mean, that's the whole persona and the marketing strategy.
Well, yeah, I love the fist that you have, that artfully drawn fist that just shows power.
Yeah. Well, and Grenache is, you know, the iron fist in the velvet glove.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, we are a little edgy, too. If you check out our Instagram, you'll see.
Yeah, you do some really clever Instagram posts.
Yeah.
Are you still putting yourself... I haven't seen one in a little while now. Have you slowed down?
No, well, you know, harvest time. I usually make all these Photoshops when I'm sitting on the couch after everyone else has gone to bed. But when harvest starts rolling in, which we're there, you know, I fall asleep on the couch when everyone else goes to bed.
Yeah, they're entertaining. It's just the Grenachista on Instagram?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, look those up if you have a chance, if you're into Instagram. They're hilarious.
Right, you're supposed to use social media to sell things, but I just try to make people laugh and myself laugh. So,
well, hopefully it brings them around to trying your wines as well.
I think so. I mean, I've got up to 16,000 followers. I'm not trying to brag, but I got 16,000 followers. No, I'm just kidding.
You might as well brag about that.
And I think probably half of them are wine drinkers. The rest are just like, what's this idiot doing?
Well, you are entertaining, that's for sure. So you've evolved to making wine now 100% whole cluster.
Yeah, in 2016 I went that direction, and we stick with it. I love it.
What do you like about it?
The
depth, the expansive flavor profile.
Yeah, what's not to love about it? I mean, we'll start the first spot is like sheer laziness. I don't have to process any fruit. We just
okay,
dump
that's
it
a good
in the
to
tank,
do it.
Right? And then the next step is that just the flavor and the life that it brings to the wine. I take a step back because of sheer laziness again, when we're fermenting, you know, with a whole cluster ferment, I don't have to do punch downs. You know, I just pump it over once a day, and that's about it. 10 days on the skins, and we press it into large format barrels, and I'm done.
Any carbonic maceration going on there?
Yeah, you know, I think in the whole cluster there typically is some carbonic happening down at the bottom, and we also do a 100% carbonic standalone wine too that we make in that style. But in just a standard whole cluster, I do think that there is some carbonic going on. You don't get those notes though. You don't get the bubble gum and the banana that you get from 100%. But like I said, I am pumping it over once a day, so we're trying to get some air in there. But you know, it just ends up as like this matrix, this big block of grapes because they're all intertwined, right. And so that's why you don't have a cap because there's nothing to push, and that juice just sits in that, and it just makes, in my opinion, some lovely wines, and you know, some of my favorite wines in the whole world are done that way. And Saint Comé and Gigondas is, you know, really what I look to as a benchmark, and all their wines are 100% whole cluster.
And I find that you don't get stimminess from 100%.
That's my greatest fear is when I see it's 100% whole cluster that is going to have a green note to it, a you know, stemmy flavor.
Yeah, you don't get that. You get that from a percentage of whole cluster. So when people say, oh, I do 30%, well, now you have those stems in there and you have all the juice soaking on them. And so 100%, you do get some juice because the berries break and there's a little bit of juice at the bottom, but most of the juice is still in the berry. And so there's no contact to the actual stem. And the stems have no caloric value, so they don't contribute to the fermentation. So I get nice, cool, solid ferments all the way through. I rarely have a stuck ferment, if ever. Nice. And I don't use commercial yeast. They just like ferment perfectly, and it makes me look at that crushery stem and like, why are you using that thing?
Yeah, that's great. That's good. That's good to hear. That's working well for you.
Yeah.
Tell us about the wines that you're making with your Grenache.
Let's see. We make all kinds of weird stuff. One of the things of only being committed to one varietal. I say three varietals because it's really Grenache Blanc, Grenache Gris, and Grenache Noir, but it's all, one
family.
Is that I'm kind of hemmed in by being only one varietal. So we've gone off of the rails.
Yeah. Well, you're making like what, six or eight wines now?
Let's see. I got a rosé. I got two Pet Nats, a Grenache Noir Pet Nat, a Grenache Blanc Pet Nat, some Piquettes that are made out of Grenache Blanc and Grenache Noir. Then we do a Grenache Blanc off our estate vineyard, Kitty Face Vineyard in Sonoma. What else? What am I missing? I'm missing a lot. We do a Carbonic Grenache Noir off of Peter Mathis's site in Sonoma. And then we have four vineyard designate Grenache Noirs, Sonoma Valley, Dry Creek Valley, Napa Carneros. And what am I missing? I'm missing one. We do some Sierra Foothill stuff.
Oh, great. Yeah. So when you say Grenache Noir, you're just talking about the red Grenache.
Yeah,
when you have Grenache Blanc, you almost need to say Grenache Noir.
Right, Noir means black in French, so the proper name is Grenache Noir, but us lazy Americans will chop that off the end and just call it Grenache, which I do too. But
for the longest time, there wasn't that much Grenache Blanc around to even worry about it.
That's true. It's very true. There's and more and more.
Not as much Grenache Gris either.
There's no Grenache Gris. I think there's like 10 acres planted across the whole state.
That's my frustration, though, because being a lover of Grenache, there are not a whole lot of vineyards around that are growing Grenache, and it's a limited supply.
More and more people are planting it again. I think that there was quite a bit more, and then people tore it out. You plant more lucrative crops, Pinot and Cabernet and Chardonnay. But they're planting it more. And what's funny is when I started this project, I had pick of the litter for fruit. People would buy it, but they were making like GSMs and stuff. And it just it was pretty cheap. That was one of the reasons that, how the sausage is made. I was looking at people paying $6,000 a ton for Pinot. And I'm like, oh, I can get Grenache from the site right next door for $2,500. And it's equally good fruit.
Right.
But now more and more people are making single varietal Grenaches, and now I don't have to fight for fruit, but it's not as easily to come by as it used to be. And prices are going up, so you guys stop making those Grenache Noirs.
Yes. You quickly mentioned Peter Mathis, and I got to give him a nod. He's one of my first Grenache makers that I just really learned to love, and a great guy, too.
Yeah, I love Pete.
Mathis Wine. What's his slogan?
I grow it, I make it.
Yeah, I grow it, I make it.
Yeah, and I'm the only one he'll sell fruit to, and he's got quite a nice little site. And he was a little hesitant in 2014 when I started with him, but now he's happy, and he wants me to take more. And it's a great relationship as we've grown together in our winemaking. That there was a time where I couldn't make picking decisions. He would say, "Your fruit's coming on Saturday." I'd be like, okay, Peter.
Okay. I'll be there.
Yeah, and that's he picks it ripe. He likes big, powerful Grenaches, and that's not what I'm making. So it's taken this is our ninth year. It was only last year when he finally agreed to pick it when I wanted to. And then this year, after we made that wine, he was like, "All right, you tell me when," because it was such a lovely wine, the 2021.
Nice. Well, when you get a chance, folks, check out thegrenacheista.com. So kind of like Grenache, drop the E at the end and add Ista, and you have thegrenacheista.com. Casey, thanks for joining me. Appreciate it.
Oh, great to be here.
On the Wine Road Live is brought to you by American Ag Credit, money for agriculture. I'll catch you again this Saturday at 1 and in 2 weeks on Tuesday. Take care of yourselves.